Hi, I'm Marlo Green, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Hi, follow the yellow brick road each week on Sundays from 8 to 9 p.m., and I've got a show for you. Tune in to get your weekly fix of British music, culture, and lots of fun. I'll see you there. Ta-ra!
In my Mersey paradise.
Hello and good evening, folks. You're now tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca from anywhere in the world. It's 8 p.m. on this Sunday evening, which means it's time for the Yellow Brick Road, CFRC's show on British and Irish music. I'm your host, Rue, and this week's show is going to be something quite different from what we've done over the last year. We're coming towards the end of the year, and this is sort of the perfect time for us to wrap up 2025, so that's what we're going to be doing today. All through the show, you're going to be hearing guests joining me on the show to talk about their favorite albums of the year, and towards the end of the show, we're going to be joined by the wonderful band Sorry, who we saw live this Tuesday playing at the Garrison in Toronto. So we have a little interview with them towards the end of the show as well. But I'm going to start us off with our first guest, Lauren, who will be joining us. And a lot of the songs that we're playing through the show are live performances from various sessions and TV appearances and festivals across the year. And I will be releasing a playlist of that, which you can find later on, so do go and do that. We hope you enjoyed this week's big effort. We'll have more of it next week. And firstly, take it away, Lauren. We are talking about the albums of 2025, and my friend Lauren is joining me on the show, and we're just going to talk about some of the albums we've enjoyed, some of the artists we've enjoyed, maybe even some shows, and kind of in a very relevant way. Lauren and I went to the Sam Fender show, so you can kind of see where this is going to be going to begin with. But firstly, Lauren, hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. It's been a little while since we saw each other at that Sam Fender show.
I was going to say there, but we were also at CMAT unknowingly. We were just in a different part of the and Fontaines. We were there too. That was our
and
first
Fontaines
meeting, just unaware of each other's presence and the proximity. But yes.
Yeah, it's crazy how many of the people I know and how many people that are joining me on the show today were all at that one Fontaines show.
Really? That's surprising, but not surprising, because I think that was the catalyst. That was it.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know how they say about the Velvet Underground, that everyone who bought, like, it may have sold 1,000 copies, but all 1,000 of those guys went and started bands, or like that, there's that Sex Pistols gig that happened in Manchester where they were like, only 40 people attended, but every one of those 40 people went and started a band.
Right.
It feels kind of like that everyone that came to that Fontaines show is just still going to similar shows.
Yeah, I think they definitely, like, not a resurgence, but I guess kind of resurgence. Like, it just feels like a lot of people just, like, got re-inspired and, like, reinvigorated by, like, Fontaines being on the scene and just, mm-hmm. like, the rise of Irish music, like, everything else just being born out of that. And I think everyone is just, like, joining the bandwagon, which is really fun.
Totally. And I feel like from that show, everyone got quite excited for what was going to come in 2025. And then here we are with so many shows. So how's your 2025 in music been?
It's been good. I don't know if I'm just going through maybe like what I repressed in my teenage years, but I've gone to more concerts this year than I have, I think, probably like my whole life, like combined. I think I've like hit 7 shows, which is very out of character for me, but I really enjoy the process. So music-wise, gig-wise, very, very, very proud of my 2025. My bank account might not be, but I am.
Any favorite shows that you went to this year?
I actually got to see Fontaines in New York when they were at the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Three sold-out nights.
I know, and I know you were going to come as well, but I know, like, just logistics and just the, just, like, madness was a factor there, but totally. That was a great experience just being able to go. And like, I met also people that I follow online who are Arctic Monkeys fans that became fans of Fontaines. So I got to meet them there, which was really great. And I got barrier the first time I was like barrier for a show, which was really exciting. But Sam Fender was probably my favorite, definitely of the bands I got to see this year.
And it was definitely his biggest North American shows because he was doing arenas this time. Like, we saw him at the, I think it's now called the Coca-Cola Coliseum, 8,000 people, kind of hockey arena. And it felt fitting for his music, didn't it?
It did. It was a really good energy in the crowd. I know as we first got there, we were looking around. We're like, is this going to fill up? Because it did feel pretty sparse. But by the end of it, like, it was full. The hockey arena had warmed up with the amount of bodies in there, which I was grateful for.
Yeah. We were worried in the beginning that there weren't going to be enough people showing up because, like, the tickets were going really cheap on the last minute. And that's not always the case. But he filled it up, like, sound-wise, energy-wise. I feel like enthusiasm from the crowd also really came through, like, all the way to the back.
Yeah, I think one thing I really enjoyed with Sam was the different age demographic that, like, really enjoy his music and came to that show. It was, like, the younger folks, like, the fangirls, but then a lot of, like, older folks, like, parents that you can tell really connect with his music, and I think that's just been the key to his success, like, how he's just able to relate to so many different people and age groups.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of that. But, like, he's also kind of in that millennial bracket where he's got the fans who are a little bit older but are still, like, connected to music. But he's still able to tap into, like, the 15-year-old kids who are, like, playing guitar for the first time. And then everybody else that's just kind of crying to his lyrics. We saw a bit of that as well, didn't we, in the crowd?
Yeah, I think some people were really, really feeling it. I mean, during Something Heavy, my eyes were misty, I'm not going to lie. I was like, that one always gets me on the album. But yeah, I think for the older folks, the lyricism and then the musical influences with, like, Bruce Springsteen, I think a lot of people really connect to that too for the older demographic. People watching as an earworm, it does fill you up with, like, that just, like, breath of emotion. You're just like, I don't know what to do with this when you hear it. But I really love Something Heavy. That one always gets me and, like, makes me emotional in ways that I probably shouldn't. Kiss me to the sun, the anger that I carry like a rocky whole life. Everybody hears that Something Heavy troubled a little while ago. Just one night. I really love C-Mat. I got into her not too long before I bought tickets to see the show. Because again, like, just been hearing, like, buzzes and whispers about her and just, like, this absolute, like, infectious energy that she has. And I really, really loved Euro Country. And seeing her perform was also, like, a lot of fun. But just how she can go, yeah, from being so playful, but then also just, like, tackling these, like, really serious, like, emotional topics. I really love C-Mat. Her album was really fun.
And also, like, Toronto crowds are kind of infamous for being really dead, but she got them moving. She got them doing the two-step dance, the whole floor.
That was a lot of fun. I think also she just will attract a good crowd of people. It's not the people that are going to be too cool for school. Like, I'm not going to participate. You get a lot of, like, the pop girlies that want to come and just have a good time and sing and be silly and enjoy themselves. So I appreciate that she also creates those environments at her shows. Like, she's able to, like, foster that energy.
But C-Mat's album definitely is about Ireland.
Yes.
Like, on Euro Country, she's, you know, making a reference to this one Dublin Shopping Centre specifically. And then she's talking about, like, the economic crash. Same song again on Euro Country. And there's a lot of other ones on there that have very Irish references. And I don't know, I feel like it just makes it more. I have never been to any of these places. Euro Country literally opens with, like, a little free time Irish verse as well. I don't speak the language. I've never been to that shopping center. But still, it's so compelling that you just feel like, oh my gosh, this is important.
That's opening track started. And yeah, it sets up that, like, time and place where, you know, you're going to, like, jump into the album and, like, what you're going to be experiencing as you're listening to it.
So was your jumping in point with C-Mat also the what were they calling it, the dance? They were calling it the Irish apple or something like that? Take a sexy picture of me?
Oh, with, like, the viral dance. Yeah, I think Take a Sexy Picture of Me was the first song that I probably saw, like, come across my feed. I think maybe when she was doing it at Glastonbury and, like, there was, like, the viral dance, like, associated to it.
Yeah. Glastonbury was a huge moment for her.
Yeah. And then you could see the whole crowd, like, doing the two-step as well when she did I Want to Be a Cowboy, which was amazing.
That's such a special moment. And also, I just feel like strong album, some really good performances that a lot of people saw. And like, that's all you need. Like, that was the moment for her.
Yeah. And I think it's like a level of relatability with her lyrics as well, just having like a really captivating stage presence. But yeah, I think just you need that, like you said, with like the one Geese video that shows up on the feed and like is like, you know, you need just like that one catalyst and then your algorithm is shot.
And like, she's really funny.
Yeah, hers was the most fun I think I've had at a concert in a long time.
And then she like started the show as well. She was on the balcony, just showed up, popped up from somewhere, and then just came down in this really like showy fashion. And it's just like, yeah, that's how you want a show to begin, you know?
I wish I was sitting on that side of the balcony so I could just looked over and like seen her there, but I was actually just adjacent, so I was able to see when the spotlight came on her and I was like, oh my God.
Oh, that's so special.
But then you were right there when she came in the crowd, right? When
she... I was close by when she came in, when she did like a little dance party in the crowd. And then like, I don't know how she manages to keep singing like really difficult high notes and stuff while she's doing all the choreography with her band and stuff. And it's just so much fun. And I feel like she's also maybe changing the way people kind of talk about female musicians and female pop musicians, because she's in Take a Sexy Picture of Me, where she's talking about like the kind of the body image pressure and like the social media backlash that she gets all the time just for kind of being like a not size zero kind of woman in pop music. So I just feel like it's been a great year for her. She's not afraid to say anything. And we saw her at the concert hall and it's going to get so much bigger.
Yeah, I'm curious where she'll be next, but it'll definitely be a bigger venue.
I did the butcher, I did the baker, I did the home and the family maker, I did school girl fantasies. Oh, I did leg things and hand stuff and single woman banter. Now tell me what was in it for me. Glasgow! I've been having a horrible time of late. It can matter. Sympathy, but all of the pain. Elvis Foglin. And that it's too much for therapy. Oh, baby, he my solution. And take a sexy picture. Take a sexy picture of me. And make me look 15. You haven't looked at me the same since I turned 27.
I got into Wet Leg's Moisturizer album recently. When I first listened to it, I think maybe I wasn't fully tuned in. Like, I had to warm up and have a couple listens. But Mange 2, that song, has been, like, stuck in my head. I think I spent a day where I just played it all day. I couldn't get enough. Yeah, I love the playfulness, like, how it's cheeky. It's sexy, you know, it's just, they're a really fun band. I wish I could have seen them live too. I think that would have been a great show.
I was at that history show. I was a little worried that, you know, because they blew up and it was sometimes bands get that like internet virality and then right. The crowd changes a little. So I was a little worried that like people would come and know one or two songs, and sometimes the crowds don't behave the best when they've come for like a few songs. But then they were all fine. Like, people were dancing in the crowd. It was really fun. But for Mange 2, I noticed this later, and it really fits with the song, that if you kind of read it in another way, it reads, "Man, get out."
That's amazing. I love that.
It totally fits the vibes of the song. They're really just telling this guy who they're talking to in the song to get out.
Yeah. The stage presence of the lead singer, she's just super, super captivating on stage.
And she comes out like flexing her muscles the whole time, doing the slow walk when they're doing...
Is it with Catch These Fists, maybe?
Catch These Fists, you're so right. And yeah. Like when that song came out, I kind of thought it was going to be more of stuff like the first album, because the first album was kind of like tongue-in-cheek and a little bit ironic in some ways. And then CPR also came, and it was kind of a love song, but it was still a little bit like with an attitude and stuff. But then when they dropped Davina McCall, and then you realize like as the album came out that, you know, despite the whole like hard image that Rian's got going on. It's like an album of love songs. Like, it is entirely start to finish just Rian is in love. This is the album about it, the concept album, and the concept is Rihanna's in lesbian love, and that's the whole album.
I read an interview where I think she had spoken about that, and usually love songs about like falling in love and like that, those first feelings, but like that idea of like consistently being in love with like your partner and exploring that, I thought was really interesting, because it is something that's not usually explored as much in music. It's that new like excited sensation, so that was really interesting.
And I love that they can be so cool while doing something so sincere. Mm. Right? Like, there's no irony in it.
Right.
It's one of the albums of the year. Artist that both of us have been listening to quite a bit this year was Olivia Dean, because she had a huge year.
Yes, Olivia Dean, my queen. I just I'm so happy for her, and just like seeing her on stage and just like the videos I've seen of her performing, like you can tell she just loves being up there and just like interacting with the crowd and singing. It's always fun to see like the person you're watching is like enjoying being on stage.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got too, because I think it was last year or the year before last, like 24 was when I saw her when she was at Oshiaga. And like, she hadn't blown up or anything. It was like half a year or a year after Messy had come out and stuff. And she was doing like a late afternoon, early evening kind of slot. But she and her band were just enjoying it so much. And the whole crowd was just like dancing along in the crowd. And they all knew the words to Messy. And they all knew the words to Dive. And Dive was the song that I'd really wanted to see. And then from there, like, I wouldn't have, if there was anyone who was going to blow up, I don't think I would have guessed in 100 years that Olivia Dean would be the one. Because her music is just so chill, and she doesn't seem like, you know, the kind of pop star that has those big productions. Like, when you see someone like Sabrina Carpenter, I think, or Chapel Roan, when you see them even a few years before they blew up, they kind of feel like they've got that star power where you just know that they're going to, like, their shows are meant to be seen in big stadiums. But with Olivia Dean, it seems so much more low-key that I wouldn't have guessed it. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, which is just a very different, like, jazz R&B kind of vibe. And I think she's had one of the biggest years in music. She's been in the charts, like, 20 weeks in a row, 25 weeks in a row. And then Man I Need was huge online.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's just because it's just really happy, like romantic music, and maybe people are just kind of craving that feel good music. I think maybe that's also just people really need that and want that. Like, when I hear Man I Need, I feel like I'm in a romantic comedy. Like, it makes me feel silly and giddy, which is really fun. And I don't think people get to like experience those emotions a lot. Like, it's more been like the doom and gloom. So I think having her music be really uplifting and fun and playful and silly is like what people are really connecting with.
Yeah, we were talking before this, and I was saying that her music feels, or that song specifically, Man I Need, feels like it could be in a John Lewis Christmas advert, because it's like not depressing and it sounds really kind of accessible.
Yeah, I think we're being an opener for Sabrina Carpenter was definitely like a catalyst, but I think the album is also just really strong. Like, that's one I'd love to get on vinyl and be able to listen to, like, that a listening experience, like, smooth, soulful, like warm, inviting. Like, it's one of those albums that I feel like is very timeless. Like, you can go back and listen to and like get that feeling very easily listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you, when we were talking about like her stage show, you'd said that it was kind of 60s in some ways. It's timeless. You're right.
It does feel like not like what's that phrase, like a flash in a pan or something like that. Like it does feel like something that can be like sustained for a long period of time. Like it will never lose that quality, like that feeling that you get when you listen to it. And I think that's what's really, really special. And it's hard to do because there's so much of that instant gratification in music, that like trendiness. But I think it's that maybe soulfulness and timelessness that people are really connecting with Olivia Dean.
Yeah, she's got that staying, that longevity. But so she did two sold out shows at Massey Hall this year in the summer. And that was before the album started blowing up. So next year is going to be huge. She's announced North American, like Canadian dates too, right?
Yes. Yeah. She's doing two shows at Scotiabank. And I think she's playing Montreal too.
21,000 people.
Yeah. And then they sold out. So.
Yeah. I hope you get tickets close at the time. Do you have a favorite song from the new album?
I really do love Man I Need.
I'd like to think you feel the same way, but I can't tell with you sometimes. So baby, let's get on the same page. Stop making me read between the lines. Already know I can't leave it alone.
To hear about the Catacombs show. So like we saw Sam Fender, and like the same weekend you were gonna go see that very, very hyped Queens of the Stone Age acoustic Massey Hall show that they were doing, which was like inspired by them recording an EP of songs that have all been out from like past albums but recorded in those French catacombs.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I hadn't seen Queens before. This was my first time seeing them. So I think to see Queens for the first time in an acoustic environment was already really unusual.
That's special.
Yeah, I think when the tickets went on sale, they were expensive, but I was also like, this is not going to happen again. And I'm glad that I did get to go. I think a lot of people didn't realize what the show would be when they were there. I think there were some true diehard Queens fans that were like, where is the rock and roll? Where are the amps? Why is it not loud? But it felt like this like gothic rock opera, like just dramatic theatrics, like all the time. Josh Homme is like a true front man, just like really captivating. There were moments like you could hear a pin drop because like everyone is just like so captivated with like what's happening on stage. And they had a full orchestra with them. There was a gong on stage. Like it was the full nines, and they went like some deep cuts into their discography, which was really, really great. Gave me a newfound appreciation to some songs that maybe I had written off at times, but hearing them live, like Mosquito Song, to hear with like a full orchestra was really special.
Deep cuts.
Yeah, they even did a Them Crooked Vultures song. They did Spinning in the Daffodils, which was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, every song that came up, like you could hear people whispering like, oh my God. And I was trying to avoid spoilers because I didn't want to be like, what's coming? I knew Someone's in the Wolf was coming, and that's one of my favorites from Queens. And when that started playing with the orchestra, like they've really evolved the songs to be like a whole new thing with the production of the show. So kudos to the orchestra that they're working with and the conductor, I guess, to be able to like reimagine their rock songs into these like bigger, greater things. It was incredible.
I feel like that's going to be one show that you're going to remember for a long time.
They actually debuted a new song too during the tour, which was really exciting.
Okay.
Called Easy Street, and it's like a really like David Bowie-esque vibe, like really groovy, very playful. And I think there's hopefully a new album from Queens coming soon. It seems like they're definitely like generating after this tour, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, you know that when they drop songs on the into the live set, there's usually like five others that are not yet fully ready, but are they're cooking.
Yes, they're cooking. And I think it was exciting to see a band like Queens, who have been active for so long, do something different. Because I do think you can get kind of stagnant and you're doing the same, like rinse, not rinse and repeat, but the same methods of production. But I think doing this show was like really invigorating to do something different to challenge yourself.
Now I know you'd use anything, anyone to make yourself look clean in sickness. No vows mean anything, so love.
Other albums that you think are worth mentioning for 2025 that you were listening to?
I like Joe's album, The Crux, when it first
Joe
came out.
as in DJ O Joe.
Yes, I have to make the distinction. It really caught my attention. Like you can hear a lot of the musical influences, like Fleetwood Mac. I think he said ELO. Like the influences, like musical influences, are really strong on the album. But they're really groovy and fun. Like I love Being Basic. That one is also an earworm. It does feel a little bit like that clip of like a song that you hear on Instagram, and you just hear like that one like little snippet in the song, and that makes it blow up. But it's really fun. I really do love that song. But I think yeah, The Crux is a good album too. Like a really enjoyable like listen as well.
I think there was one album that came out in October that everybody has been talking about. And I think you've caught the geese fever too.
I don't think I could avoid the geese. I was hearing the honking or quacking very loudly. It was hard to avoid it. But I get it. I get it. Cameron Winter's voice reminds me a lot of like Julian Casablancas's voice. I do get that vibe with his voice and the way that he delivers the lyrics. It was a good album. I also actually really enjoyed Turnstile, and they also were very surprising to me because to have like a more punky band use like horns and a lot of like instrumentation in their music was really unexpected, but I really enjoyed that.
They broke out of just being a hardcore band on this album.
Yes, yeah.
Never Enough was the album name.
Yeah, it was not what I would expect, because sometimes I feel like that music feels like it's like I'm a teenager trying to break out of my feelings, which is so fair and you need to feel that. But it felt like a really like elevated take. Like it was really like, again, unusual. Like my ears were just like picking up all these things. I was like, whoa, there's like a lot more layers to the album, which I really enjoyed.
Albums this year kind of had to grow on us. Like there initially weren't any like immediate standout albums that were like, oh, this is the album of the year, or this is something big to that we're all going to be thinking about initially. But then like slowly a lot of these albums grew on us.
I liked The Last Dinner Party's latest album, and that came out I think later in the year as well, From the
From the
Pit.
Pyre.
That was a really good album too. I enjoyed listening to that. I think it's called The Sith. There's like a really great guitar solo, and it reminds me of those really great like guitar solos of pop songs. I feel like you don't get those anymore, like those really like epic guitar solos in the middle of a song.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, there was a point when you could expect to hear like a guitar solo from Prince or someone like that coming through as a like a guesting on, I don't know, like you'd hear it on like a Madonna album or like on a Michael Jackson album or something.
Yeah, I feel like you're not hearing like guitar and like pop music as much. So I really love that in that song. That moment always really stands out to me, and it just feels like this really like epic moment, which I really loved. So you know what? I was actually gonna ask you if you've listened to the Gurriers.
I have, yes.
Are you going to their show in March?
I'm definitely planning on going to the show.
Okay, I will see you there then, because I got
Yes.
that.
Any
So.
other big shows like that you're waiting for next year?
I got sucked into the Foo Fighters tour with Queens of the Stone Age, but I just
Fair.
want to see Queens of the Stone Age because I haven't seen them like fully live. It's like three bands on the lineup. I think it's Mannequin Pussy, Queens, and then Foo Fighters playing in Toronto.
They've picked really good openers.
Yeah. Oh, and Amel and the Sniffer. Sorry, I got Amel and the Sniffer tickets as well.
Of course.
So I'm excited for that. Yeah.
That's going to be so good. Well, it looks like you've got a really good lineup for next year.
Again, I'm excited. My bank account's not. We'll see what.
I feel that.
Yeah, I'm like, what are we going to spend our money on if not live gigs, right?
So that's such a good point. Awesome, Lauren. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Here back on the Yellow Brick Road, and we've been wrapping up our 2025 in music, and I've been having guests with cool music taste and friends of the show dropping by to give me their wrap-ups of the year and what music they've been listening to this year and just generally how 2025 has looked for them musically. And Kelly is joining me on the show now. Hey, Kelly.
Hello. Hi. I am definitely a friend of the show and not one with good music taste. we'll see.
You've got good music taste. We met at the pop show.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that was last year, and we just we were both there by ourselves, so we started talking, and that was really fun. So I'm happy that we got to know each other and stuff.
Yeah, we were at that big history show. It was like their first show in like 20 years coming to North America. It was just fun to see Jarvis in the flesh. Like, he's as eccentric in the flesh as you think he is from like clips and stuff.
Yeah, I got really into listening to Pulp in high school, actually, which was very funny. I grew up, again, like New York City, where I feel like at the time, no American teenager in high school was listening to Pulp. And it was very interesting. Like, I think that, Pulp and obviously Blur, like listening to that in high school, really in late high school, really developed who I was towards the end of my high school life, which I think is, you know, just the theatricalness of that music and of Jarvis. It was really satisfying to be able to finally see that in live, because that was never something I thought I was going to be able to see live.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought that they would come back as strongly as they did. But I do feel like they've also been riding a bit of a Britpop revival wave, haven't they?
Yes, I think it's interesting because, I mean, when Oasis came back, I did not know people liked Oasis like that. You know, I did not know my fellow Americans cared about Oasis. Like,
I don't think they knew either.
Yeah, because I mean, I've had this conversation with, I think you, I've had this conversation with other people where Oasis has always obviously been big. Like, they're the biggest American band, biggest Britpop American band. But I think, you know, talk to the average American and they have no idea who Pulp and Blur are, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think seeing the reaction to Oasis was very eye-opening for me because I did not know. But
yeah, I feel like they just maybe dented the culture, the like American consciousness a little bit more culturally than the other guys were able to.
I think it maybe might be related to like 90s nostalgia that is obviously becoming like a way more popular in popular culture. So I think people are discovering a lot of 90s bands again and just the aesthetic of it.
There was a new album this time too, so it wasn't totally nostalgia.
It never feels like they're relying too much on their 90s fame, their moment of fame, you know. But I think with their new album, it's different enough to justify its existence. Like, I didn't feel like it was a regurgitation of any of their previous work, but you can definitely feel their previous work in it. I think a lot of their songs, particularly for me, remind me of His and Hers era of Pulp. You know, it's not just maybe not reminiscent to like people who only know Different Class or but I think His and Hers, there's a lot like Got to Have Love, I think, is very His and Hers. But then you have the slower songs that like you said, like kind of Americana, where you kind of, you know, like that album set, like that album cover of the desert. You kind of feel that in some of the songs.
I guess you're right. It is sort of a Pulp Western in some ways.
Yeah.
I feel like they did it their own way. Like they used the influences that are very much pulp. Like maybe they didn't go down the country route, but they used the Northern Soul influences, like you were saying on Got to Have Love and stuff, where it was like, I think when they did that live this year, Jarvis had like this picture, where one of his slideshow pointers of like the club in Sheffield, where he was like, let me take you on a trip to Sheffield. And then he showed us this picture of the nightclub that they used to go and listen to like Northern Soul hits at.
I mean, you can tell there just always has been a dance aspect to some of their songs. Like, even if they're talking about something that you would never, you know, dance to, like the subject matter of the song, you still are dancing to it. And it still feels like you're in the club. You know, it makes it sometimes you listen to some of their songs. And I think, again, their new album succeeds in this too, where I was not alive, and I was alive for 9 months in the 90s, but these songs can transport you back. I feel like I'm in the club in the 90s, sweaty, and I've never, like, on club drugs or something. It transports you to a certain setting, you know. It, especially as a teenager who was a very shy and awkward person, you know, it allows you to, they're so visual to me that it feels like you are in that song for a period of time where you experience it almost, you know. I always responded to that. That was really fun.
But yeah, I think that's one of the albums of the year. Always love watching Jarvis like on stage doing his thing. And then you were a lot more like, I had a seated ticket, so I was kind of like squinting from out there. But there was that one moment in the set where I think it was for Something Changed that they did the song acoustic, and like it was just the core members of Pulp kind of crowded around like a few mics, and like Nick was sitting on his acoustic drum, and it felt like that was a moment that was literally just for the front row, you know, like very intimate.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, it felt very. I think they have been doing that. Like they do the acoustic version of Something Changed. It's theatrical in the sense where Jarvis is all over the stage and they utilize every inch of the stage. There's a lot of members on stage at one time. There's height to the stage, you know, there's like a staircase. And so it is fun to see them like come together, and it almost looks just like a jam session. Like you can imagine them in an attic somewhere playing that. And obviously they're all like in their middle age at this point, but it almost feels like it transports you back to like a younger time where like you can see young adults playing the same instruments and doing it the same way they used to, you know?
Yeah. It also helps that they sometimes have like the visuals from like the Baby's music video from 30 years ago behind them. So it's really a mix of like the Pulp in front of you. Jarvis is now like 60 or 61.
I think 61 or something like that. Yeah.
So like you've got the present day 60-year-old Jarvis still doing his shenanigans, dancing on stage, chucking grapes around and trying to catch it. Throwing things into the audience and just generally like vibing as he often does. But then you also see that juxtaposed with like a 30-year-old Jarvis 30 years ago, still pulling those dance moves and all that stuff. In that way, it was almost interesting to see. We were talking about Pulp's tiny desk. They were confined in these little spaces playing these songs acoustic. I guess that was a good one for anyone who didn't get to catch like the Something Changed vibe. You could sort of see it in the tiny desk. I love the way they did This Is Hardcore, like the way they they managed to pull it off acoustically like that. And then they brought back Acrylic Afternoons at the end, and I was done.
Jarvis is such a dynamic performer, I think. Obviously, there's like only a few songs where he has a guitar, you know, so he has full range of the stage, and he really utilizes that, which I think is part of the reason why the shows themselves are really fun to go to. Like,
but so Pulp More, one of your albums of the year?
I think so. I really like that. I mean, I listened to Grown Ups a lot at the gym for some reason. I love that song. I think that's maybe one of my favorite songs from the album Grown Ups. They're so inspired by movie visuals and just movies in general, like movie narratives, that a lot of the songs that they make sometimes feel like a translation of a movie, into a song. You can tell that they got inspired by a particular narrative thread in a movie, and they really like latched onto that, which I thought, I always think it's interesting. Just a sunset, someone said, something is coming to an end. Yes, it's a sunset, someone said, and just exactly how much did you spend?
Another one of the broader themes of 2025 has sort of just been the way, like, music has really thrown politics up into the spotlight, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. A lot of musicians have suddenly found themselves under a very, like, harsh and glaring spotlight because of things that they may have been saying for years and years, but suddenly they're in the focus a lot more than they maybe even should be. So it's like... Mm-hmm. Thinking about this from the beginning of the year, there was all that, like, building up from last year, there was all the talk about South by Southwest and how, like, the American military was a sponsor of it and people wanted that to be dropped. So I think every single Irish artist that was supposed to be playing at South by pulled out last year. And a lot of British artists pulled out too. And then slowly, slowly, like, local names, like American artists also started to pull out. A number of Canadian artists pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
And they did eventually drop South by Southwest as a sponsor. But then there was that whole thing as well where, like, the Texas government was threatening bans and, like, sending these big, like, bravado-filled statements about them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then... I think this year they tried to start a London chapter of South by Southwest. And again, like, half the artists pulled out of it.
Yeah.
But in the middle of all of that, I think one of the big moments was Coachella Festival. Yeah. And sure, other artists may have been speaking up at Coachella and stuff like that. Bob Villain did a set at Coachella that surprisingly went unnoticed. But it was Kneecap at Coachella that really seemed to catch everybody's, and by everybody, I mean, like, the American media's attention.
I think when we're talking about this, there is an extent to which I think of my mom and dad have no idea what we're talking about. You know, like, the average American who goes to work every day probably has no idea, still has no idea who Kneecap is. But anyone who is actively online in a music space, they now know who Kneecap is. And I think that's, it's very interesting to see. I think a lot of, especially in America, a lot of younger people under 30 or even under 35, like, becoming disillusioned with the idea, like, actually, we should care about what our artists are saying, and we should actually care where our taxpayer dollars are going and things like that. I went to go see Mannequin Pussy recently, and they're great performers, and the lead singer, Marissa, in that band, like, she, like, goes on, like, multiple, I don't want to say call it rants, that sounds negative, but multiple rants about politics. And you can tell that, like, these younger artists are getting fed up, and they are speaking their mind in a way that has always been going on smaller stages, you know. And I think it just now people are realizing, like, oh, like, this can happen on a bigger stage, and you can actually say things. And
I think after Coachella, you had a lot more artists that started to speak out. And then our kind of big climax point was probably Glastonbury this year.
Yes.
That's where, you know, there was all this raging debate and, like, rumors about whether or not Kneecap set will be broadcast. And I think even before the festival happened, there were, like, there were American pressure groups trying to, and like, music industry pressure groups trying to get Kneecap off the Glastonbury lineup. And the festival obviously said that, you know, they're not going to be listening to any such thing because they booked their festival, kind of, they booked their lineup, they have faith in their lineup. They also think that people, like, should be allowed to come and express political opinions at a political music festival, like, because Glastonbury was a hippie festival when it started, and it's had, like, stages which are literally just about, like, workshops and speakers and speeches. I mean, this is a festival where I think it was when the Libertines were playing a couple of years ago. They had, like, they had Jeremy Corbyn just, like, zoom in from there and give a little speech in the middle of the show. And that's very normal for Glastonbury.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, American media, American politics were as familiar with how Glastonbury runs that they thought it would be unusual for such a thing to happen. But there was a lot of pressure to get them off the lineup. And I think ultimately the BBC sort of, I think because they didn't want, like, the UK government to have more headaches, or maybe apparently the government didn't directly say to them, you cannot show these guys or there will be trouble. But there were MPs within Parliament as well who were, like, starting to, you know, call for kneecap to be removed from the lineup, which didn't end up happening. But then the BBC said that they wouldn't show it live.
Kneecap
were playing and they would be possibly shown, like, an edited down version would be shown later, but they weren't going to be shown live. In the end, that didn't end up mattering because an hour before Kneecap was supposed to go on stage, Bob Villain went and opened the show for
them. Yes, which I think became a way bigger cultural point. Again, the average person would have no idea who they were if it wasn't made such a big deal, which ultimately it's a positive that they actually, like, their message got to more people, you know.
And I think it kind of opened the floodgates for a lot of other bands, because I think people who had been a little bit more quieter in the way they were saying things and speaking up started to think, well, you know, it almost comes down to, well, you can't arrest us all.
Yeah, exactly.
After Kneecap started being sent to court and having multiple hearings and there was an investigation into Bob Villain, I think we started to see much more loudly, like, Fontaine's DC, for example, they've always had the Palestinian flag, like, hanging from Carlos's keyboards, and he spoke up at the Rolling Stone Awards last year as well. And generally, they've always been very outspoken about it. But I think they felt it needed to be bigger coming from them, seeing as how they were, like, you know, there were people who were asking Fontaines to drop Kneecap as their opener for the outdoor show.
Yeah.
And I think Fontaines at that point thought, well, you've either got a very wrong idea of us, or we need to stop and show you that that's not something you should ever think about us. Because then they started having the big screens as well, just being like, Israel is committing genocide in Palestine, and, like, all those big screens. And they started, like, Green had, I think when they played in Dublin or something, there was a really lovely moment where he said, you know, it might feel scary to speak up, but you're not alone. You should absolutely be using your voice and things like that. Yeah. They came out, then, like, bands like Murder Capital started, like, you know, pulling shows when they weren't allowed to have a flag up in Berlin and Cologne. And then there was the whole thing at Victoria's Fest where the Mary Wallopers were pulled off stage for having a flag on stage. And, you know, in solidarity with them, a lot of bands, including The Last Dinner Party, who had at all their shows been having these, like, QR codes go up on the screens to make, like, a donation to kind of Gaza, I think, kitchen funds or some charity of that sort. So a lot more bands started to come up. And then you can kind of see that, like, the foot has gone off the gas for a lot of these political entities. Like, Kneecap are cleared of all their charges. They are suing the Canadian government, and
that's really? I didn't know that.
Gasparo for, like, trying to ban them when he actually couldn't. He didn't have the authority to do that.
Yeah.
They're suing the guys in Hungary. I think they're suing the Hungarian government as well. There's a lot of stuff going on for them. And I think now Bob Villain as well, for the Glastonbury coverage, they are suing the RTE for kind of defamatorily saying that they were being anti-Semitic when they were not. So I feel like the tide is starting to turn on all that too.
I think it's interesting, the reaction in America in particular, because a lot of these big festivals, thinking like Woodstock, like, these are all, like, anti-Vietnam War protest, basically, originally. You know, there were a bunch of hippies getting together protesting the fact that they had to be drafted into war, you know.
Glastonbury!
I think one of the bands that has kind of come up and has been speaking, has always been like speaking out for marginalized people and has been kind of flying the freak flag high, if I can say that in some ways, have been My Chemical Romance. And I feel like there's never been a better time for them to come back. And they came back and you saw them.
Yeah, I saw them in Toronto. Obviously, this tour, they had the Black Parade tour. Almost 20 years, yeah, basically. Yeah, 2006, I guess next year will be 20 years. It was really fun. I mean, you think about the scale of it. And again, there's no experience like going to a Michael Gorman show. And when I went to my first Michael Gorman show in 2022 in Albany, I was in the general admission area. And just being able to look around and seeing so many like queer young people who obviously have had their like childhood morph by listening to My Chemical Romance in such a positive way. It's so nice, you know, it's so positive. Like you can tell that a lot of these people are there with their best friend that they met because of the band. You know, a lot of people, like they might have to dress a certain way every day, you know, and they just feel so comfortable going to these shows and dressing however they want and expressing themselves.
And one of the reasons why people feel they can express themselves so freely at My Chemical Romance shows is because the band have always like been very openly supportive of them, have been very like, even sometimes I think in the early days, putting themselves and their own safety on the line to be like, these are safe spaces for people who are marginalized, who are queer, who are a little bit left of the dial in any other way. They were one of the few bands that was like, you know, more vocally kind of anti-misogynist at a time when pop punk was an almost predatory place for young women to be and stuff like that. And that, like, you know, they continued that form this time too, because I kind of remember from some of the first shows of this tour, I can't even remember if it was North America or maybe even in Europe, but they went on stage and like, you know, they were like openly kind of flying the trans flag and saying that, you know, it kind of became a part of their performance. I'm not big enough a fan to remember what exactly Gerard Way had said, but like he makes these spaces, like it becomes part of their, like resistance is a part of their performance as well, like their ethos and everything that they have done and said and kind of put their money where their mouth is almost. And then, you know, like they continued that this time.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I still think that MCR shows feel like such a safe space for that. You know, like you can still go there and like you can still have confidence that the people on stage care about you and like aren't going to like hate your existence.
Yeah. So. And importantly also, like not just the guys on stage who you're paying money to see, but also the people standing around.
The people around you. Yeah. Like you just feel safe.
And I found the quote, it's not from this year, it was a few years ago, but I guess it's stuck in like the fact that it was said has stuck in my mind so much that like I could still go look it up. It was Gerard Way at one of their shows saying, in the face of extermination, we say F you.
It's so good. Like, I mean, he said that while wearing a secretary skirt and outfit, you know, and this was like after a huge wave of anti-trans litigation came out, you know, so.
Do we actually know what this year's show is about? I have not worked out the lore.
this year's show, so they did change the lore a little bit. You know, it's a Black Parade album tour, but there's like some of the characters that they play were non-existent in the original, like the original concept album, and they did change some of the meaning of some of the songs with the new concept, I guess you can say. But I think right now it's just a Soviet-inspired country, and they are basically props, I guess you can say, is Dictator and MCR, the band. They're playing people who are being forced to perform for the dictator as a kind of like a propaganda stunt. So they play people who are, who die after every show, but are reincarnated or cloned, and they are being forced to go on stage. So that's the lore. Gerard, the character on stage, does not want to be there, which I think is a pretty interesting idea that like you're playing a nostalgia bait tour, maybe like quote, and your character does not want to be on stage, is being forced to be on stage. It's almost like you're being forced to regurgitate the album that you made 20 years ago, which I think is an interesting concept. Like, it's like, you can tell it's like the artist struggling to, you know, balance like the, I don't know, a balance between new and old, you know, I don't know.
It's a really, really interesting concept. And I love that we finally know a little bit more about what the live show is like. So next year, who knows what they're going to do when they come back. They may change the concept of it. They may, you know, because next year is properly 20 years since the Black Parade came out, revolutionary album and everything. Mm-hmm. But they've got this North American tour. I think they have picked very good openers. Like, everyone from people that they look up to, like, really interesting new bands. Which show are you going to see, and who's your opener?
I'm seeing MCR again in Mexico City, and so the Hives will be opening for them there.
And the Mexican fans also really love the Hives, so I think you're going to have an incredible show.
Yeah.
Slightly smaller bands, though. We've done Pulp, we've done My Chemical Romance. Both of these guys have been stadium fillers, but I think you and I can also agree that one of the most fun and intense shows we went to was the Model Actress show this year.
Yes, that was just great. I mean, it was at Lee's Palace in Toronto, and it was just like talking about like a performance. Like, I think the theme of what we're talking about throughout this entire conversation, I think, has been good front for people, you know, like there's a theatrical element to all of this, and it shows that even at a small show you can have that kind of larger than life personality, which is great.
Their singer Cole is absolutely that. He, like, for such a small show in what is basically like a sort of sweaty club, he has like three outfit changes. He'll come on like dressed up in all these really cool like sashes and scarves and everything. And he's in the pit half the time.
Yeah.
What surprised me the most with that show is, like, it sounds so industrial. I'm so surprised that it's all done on guitars.
Yeah, there's no sense, right?
There's no sense.
Yeah. It just sounds, it's great. Like, because, like you said, it's almost like a small club in the sense of, like, the location. But their music, they add an element that I think is missing from a lot of that kind of similar music. Where there is almost a club aspect to it. Talk about, again, like, or not like it reminds me of Pulp because it doesn't really sound anything similar, but like there's an aspect to it when you're listening to like Cinderella, like it feels like you're listening to it in a sweaty club. That song can come on at a bar and people can just like, you know, start raving.
They're, I think, coming back and opening for Peaches next year. And I think that's a show we've got to go to because it's a perfect combination.
Yeah, it's at the Danforth, I think. And I think that would be interesting to see. Like, I want to see how the performance that we saw, I would love to see how that can translate into a bigger show, you know, a bigger venue. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure at the Danforth they have like a barricade. Like, how is that going to happen? But
also, I guess we should probably just mention the album itself, Pirouette. Like, Cinderella was a standout song for me. And just kind of, it's like pouring your heart out, but it's almost like you're puking your heart out in the club. It's like kind of visceral and confessional, but you can also just lose yourself in dancing.
That's an aspect that I think is missing from a lot of that kind of similar music, where there it just feels very personal, you know. It feels like there is that, like you said, confessional aspect to it, where it just feels like you're listening to something you almost shouldn't be listening to, you know, and you're listening to someone have like a breakdown almost, you know. And it's just great. I can see how my power only was fire.
words laying face to face as they held.